Okay, this week is Parashas Vayechi, Shabbos Chazak, the end of Sefer Bereishis. Sefer Bereishis is Maisa Avos Simla Bonin. It's the foundation of Klal Yisrael. It's a very significant Shabbos, especially when it coincides with Sar B'Teves, which is the beginning of the Churban, the Aschalto de Poranusa, and we pretty much we emerge, we go into Shabbos, we enter into Shabbos in a state of fasting, and on this Shabbos we have to conclude Chazak, Chazak, v'nischazek. That's really where we need the most chizuk. Interesting, I saw, just to start off with a little Asar B'Teves, that there are four tzomos. There's the tzom harvi, the tzom hachamichit, tzom hashvid, and the tzom hasiri. Tisha B'Av, all the fast days, we get something out of. What do I mean? Tisha B'Av, it was a terrible tragedy. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. But through the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, what happened?
We survived.
We got kapara. Hashem wanted to pour His anger upon us. Hashem said, I'll exchange you for the Beis Hamikdash. Through the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, we were spared. We survived. So it's a terrible day, but yet in the day, in the tragedy, there was a silver lining that there was salvation. Furthermore, Mashiach was born. In the Churban begins the Geula. What about Tzom Gedalia? Tzom Gedalia, Chazal say very clearly that Misa Sadikim is a kapara for Klal Yisrael. When a tzaddik dies, it's a terrible tragedy, but through the mitzvah of a tzaddik, that brings kapara for Klal Yisrael. Shivasa B'Tamuz, what happened? One of the five things that happened was Moshe shared the Luchos. When Moshe shared the luchos, that was shock treatment. That also we there was something to gain from that. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not destroy us. The Chedo Egel. The Chedo Egel was mitigated partially through the Shiras Haluchos. But what's so difficult? The reason why the fast of Asar B'Teves is such a difficult fast is because we get nothing out of it. There's no gain in Asar B'Teves. Yerushalayim there was a siege. The Churban began. It was a point beyond return. Nebuchadnezzar arrived. He was here to stay. He would not leave until he destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. And what do we get out of this? We get kapara. Was Mashiach born? Was the Shur Saluchos was a shock therapy for us that we recognize our chatam and we stopped doing the eight? Do we get anything out of this?
Sure.
Nothing. All of the other tragedies brought with it a silver lining, some degree of consolation. But Asar B'Teves, it's just kul tzar. That's the tzar of the beginning. That's why it's such a severe fast day. Even if we'd fall on Shabbos, we would be required to fast. Okay, that's just we need to say with a lot of koya chazak, chazak, v'dis chazek, when we conclude Chumash Bereishis, especially when it coincides with the end of the fast of Asar B'Teves. Parashas Vayechi begins with the Parashas Stuma. We all know the first Rashi. Love Parashas Zostuma. Why is this Parashas Stuma? Lefi Shekevin Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu. Since in this week's Parasha, Yaakov Avinu would be Niftar. Nistimu Einehem V'libam Shel Yisrael. Their eyes and hearts of Klal Yisrael were sealed. Mitzoras HaShibud. Shehischilu L'Shabdam. The Shibud would begin. They would begin to serve the Egyptians as slaves. Davar Acher, Shebikesh Legalois Es HaKetz, Labanu V'Nista Mimenu, and he held back. Yaakov did not reveal the Ketz. Question is, why does Rashi use these two words, Nistamu Einehem V'Libam? We know every word of Rashi is written with utmost precision. What is the symbolic significance of their eyes and their hearts? So I saw an idea, a starting point from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Sefer Emes Yaakov. In the beginning, he makes the following observation. We know that we have in the Torah psuchos and stumos. What is the difference between a psucha and a stuma? Psucha and stuma, psucha starts on a new line. You have a section of the Torah, go through a parasha, you then get to a point, the sugya is over, and then we start new. We start a new section. The section starts on the beginning of a line. But there must be at least a blank space of nine letters on the previous line between the end of the old parasha and the beginning of the parasha on the next line. What is a stuma? Parasha stuma. A parasha stuma also has a break of at least nine letters between the previous parasha and the next parasha. The only difference is it begins on the same line. In halacha, what is a stuma? If you have the art scroll chumash, they're very good. They were the ones that were machadish. They were the first ones to write a shul chumash where they actually show you in the chumash a psucha and a stuma, just like the way it is in the Sefer Torah. A parasha stuma also has a blank space of 9 letters between the previous parasha and the new parasha, except that it begins on the same line. Psucha begins on the next line. That's the only difference. So Yaakov Kamenetsky says that when it says here in Rashi, Loma Parsha Zo Stuma, the word Stuma here is being used not the way it's used in Shulchan Aruch. Because this Stuma doesn't have any blank space at all. It begins on the same line as the other Parsha, the previous Parsha, and there is no blank space between the previous section and the new section. When you normally use the term stuma, it means it begins on the same line as the previous section, but there's a blank space of 9 letters between the previous section and the new section. Here we have a stuma which begins on the same line as the previous section, and there's not even 9 letters between the previous section and the new section. So it's not the same use as a stuma that's used in Shulchan Aruch and used in reference to other Shulchan Aruch psuchs and stumas. What does that mean? So we have to understand the following. Why indeed is there a break between a previous parasha and a new parasha? Why can't the Torah, there are no sentences, there are no paragraphs, so why do we even need for there to be psuchos and stumos? Let the Torah just be one continuous flow, non-stop, the space between words, and that should be sufficient. Anyway, we have to figure out where the pasuk, the sentence ends. So Chazal give us really, there are two reasons. Number one is, You want to show that you come to a certain point, this is a new section. It's a new topic. We've concluded this inyan, and now we're beginning again a new way. We want to show you, don't confuse what we had before. It's fresh. Have a fresh mind, new topic, and there's no connection to what we learned above. That's one reason. Another reason is, even if it's not a new topic, but a human being is limited, you need a break. You need a little vacation. You need revach lehispoinein bein inyin leinyin. Human beings need to take things in. That's why we go to sleep at night. Why does Hashem create a world where a person has to sleep? A person should be able to go nonstop. Their answer is, a person needs a period of time where his mind has to absorb what has occurred in the last, whatever, period of time. Process the information. Even if what you're doing on the next day is exactly the same as a continuation, but you still need a break to process the information. Even if you have two parshios and they are related to one another, there has to be a break of 9 letters in order. Revach l'spoin ben inyin lein. Now here's the point I want to make. What's the difference then between the parsha psucha in the Shulchan Aruch's term and the parsha stuma? The difference is, why is the blank space being used for the past, or is the blank space being used for the future, for the next parasha? When you have a parasha stuma, there's no significance in the new section. The new section is really just a continuation. The significance of the blank space is to give you revach lehispoinein, the previous section. Take what you've learned, absorb the teaching of what you've learned in the previous section, process that information. The next section, that's not important. The next section, it's not really new. It's really just a continuation. Maybe it is new, maybe it's not new, but that's not the reason why we're giving you a blank space. Okay, the smichos, they are drashos, but let's just talk on a very simple level. What's up, when you have a parsha psucha, the primary goal of the blank space is to give kavod, importance to the new section, to the next section, the section that begins on the beginning of a new line. We're not so interested in giving you revach l'spoinein ben inyilin. That's not the main objective. The fact that the next parsha begins on a new line, it's telling us this is new. It's fresh, and have a fresh mind, clear your mind. We're beginning a new topic. Eyes are symbolic of the future. Ezeh chacham haroya es hanoilat, to see the future. When you look with your eyes, you're seeing what the eyes are always used in Chazal, symbolic of what's coming ahead of you. The heart, the lev, is what understands. It represents the concept of understanding. You only understand, primarily understand the past, what happened in the past. Rashi begins, Loma Parsha Zos Stuma. Why is this Parsha Stuma? Meaning what? It's not a Parsha Psucha, and it's not a Parsha Stuma with a lowercase Samach. But why is this a Parsha Stuma with a capital Samach? Meaning, there's no blank space at all. And Parsha Psucha begins on the next line. Parsha Stuma begins on the same one. But they have in common, there's a blank space of 9 letters. This Parsha begins on the same line and doesn't even have 9 letters. So why don't we have 9 letters, not for the Psucha, not for the Stuma? Why is it completely closed? The answer is because of the Golus, the Shibud, the Kate was not revealed, and the tragedy of Mitzas Yaakov and the Golus is it closed up both our hearts and eyes. We don't, when there's a tzara, we don't have the ability to reflect on what happened in the past and have revach lehisboinein past events to take it in and learn about. And what else? What's the other problem? We don't have, our eyes are closed. We don't have the ability to start fresh. Let bygones be bygones, and let's now turn over a new leaf, and let's prepare for the future. That's the significance of Parsha Svayechi being a stuma. It's not your ordinary stuma. It's a stuma with a capital Samach. There's no 9 letters. 9 letters can go, 9 letters, blank 9 letters are either for the past or for the future. None of the above. We Golus, that's the tzara of Golus, of Shibud. We are unable to absorb the lessons of the past, and we don't have the ability to have a fresh outlook to the future. The Libam, the Einehem Shel Yisrael. Okay, let's go to another idea. Yaakov Avinu comes to bring his two children. He gets word, Hinei Avi Choylev, Yikach Hashmei Venav Imo, Es Menashe V'Yasefroim, V'Yagei L'Yaakov, V'Yom Hinei V'Nichol Yosef O'Elecha, V'Yizchazek Yisrael Yisrael Meit. Okay, he gives him a nice speech. And then he says, "Nu, let me bless your children." I'm jumping ahead. We'll come back to some of this maybe soon. Let me bless your children. He brings over his children, and let me find Vayar Yishol Es Bnei Yosef. And then he says something very disturbing. Vayomer Mi Eile. Who are these people? What do you mean? These are my children. These are your grandchildren. They've been by your side every single day. Menashe certainly came to Yaakov. Ephraim, Chazal say, he taught him Torah every day. He was his chavrusa. You don't know who these are? Well, what does this mean, you don't know who they are? So Rashi tells us, very frightening pasuk, the Shechina rested upon Yaakov. He now wanted to give them the bracha. He was going to give them the mashpia bracha. Bikesh levarchon. The Nestalka Shechina Mimenu, the Shechina departed. Serious business. Lefi, because he saw Peruach HaKodesh, Yeravam Ben Nevat. Oh, Mamish, we're learning that timely, but we're learning today, you saw Yeravam Ben Nevat. What a coincidence. The Achav, Lotzeis Ne Ephraim, the Yehu Bonav Mimenashe. Miele, who are these people? Mehechon Yotzu Eilo Eilu She'enon Ru'uyin Lebrach. They're not deserving of Brach. Scary pasuk. So what does Yosef say? What would you say? What would you say? How would you respond? One thing is for sure. What he's going to do, no one here would do. It's a shocking pasuk. We're brainwashed. We read the pasuk and we don't think. We read this week. This is the last pasuk in the third Aliyah this week. Monday, Thursday. No one would do what he did. No one. Vayomer Yosef El Aviv. He goes home. Goes to his wife and he says, "Where do you put the ksuba? Where is the ksuba? Hanging on the wall? Oh, they're hanging on the wall. There are many gedolim that are very pro hanging on the wall, even though it's not a very nice document. It talks about death and divorce. Who'd want to hang up a document in your house that says, when I die and I divorce you, you'll..." The answer is many gedolim Yisrael are very pro hanging up because at least you'll know where your ksuba is. At least it's kedai just for that. Very, very, very good idea to have a very nice, expensive ksuba. Go to town. At least you'll know where it is. How many people today don't know where their ksuba is? And if you don't know where your ksuba is, it's a very big problem. Right, my father, Tzachon Levracha, for many balabatim, many if not most, he made for them a second ksuba. Okay, when you're very married for 50 years, it begins, where's my ksuba? If you have it hanging on the wall, it's not so bad. Okay, Bonaihim, Hashem Nosen Li Elokim Bozeh. He runs home, goes to his dining room, takes off the frame, he brings it to here's the ksuba. Now give them the bracha. What? What's going on here? That's going to solve the problem. Would anyone here do this? Oh, okay. I'm asking. It's a nice ksuba. I like what it says in the ksuba. Awesome. It's a nice ksav, nice artwork. Rashi, bozeh. I'm not making this up. Herlo shtar erisin ushtar kisuba. He showed them the marriage document and the ksuba. Ubikesh Yosef rachman aladover. Yosef was mevakesh rachman v'noch olav ruach hakodesh. What's going on? And it worked. V'yom kochem olav avorchem zesh amar. It worked. Okay, it worked. He was mevak. What's going on here? So I want to say a pashtun of arts. I didn't see it anywhere, but I think it's very pashtun and it fits. Let's go back to. This story that's happening here, this is not the first time something like this happened. Who else gave a bracha? When else do we find a disagreement over who should get a bracha? Yaakov himself. Yeah. Yaakov received the bracha from Yitzchak. Yeah. Did his father want to give him a bracha? No. No way. Did Yitzchak plan to give Yaakov a bracha? Absolutely not. He wanted to give the bracha to Esav. Yaakov had to go to extreme measures to get the bracha by disguising himself as Esav against his mother. His mother had to persuade him and had to go get dressed up and had to put on special clothing and put on hair on his. They went to extreme measures and a lie, all these things to get the bracha. Same exact thing. He deceived his father into giving him the bracha. Here again, Yaakov doesn't want to give the bracha. Yosef has to convince him. Now let's take a step back. Let's go back to Parshas Tobos. It's a very, the question is much greater than all the answers that are given. How Yaakov was able to pull it off doesn't really answer the question, how did he do it? Yitzchak, he sensed from the very beginning, are you really my son, Esav? I know there are many midrashim and mahalachim, you go look at mafarshim, everyone has a mahalach, how to explain what was going on. All these complicated mahalachim. But everything is said and done. What's going on here? Put away all the midrashim. Look at it very simple. Yitzchak says, I want to give the bracha to Esav. Here comes in a person. How in the world did you come back in record time? I sent you out 5 minutes ago and already you're back with matamim. I told you to go out to the field to go trap an animal and you're back here in record time. Impossible. It cannot be done so quickly. Alright, maybe at Siat Shnaya, Ki Hikra, Hashem, Elokecha Lefanai, all of a sudden he's religious. Esav, all of a sudden, is a cool young man with pious and long beard. And all of a sudden, the Ibn Shalaylam, let's go. Kochem Noilai, come here. Hakol Kol Yaakov, the Hayadayim Yidei Esav. The Kol is Yaakov. Wasn't he suspicious? And yet, for some strange reason, Hashem put a machshav in his head. Just do it. Just get over with. Go for it. Take a risk. You're dealing with the nitzchias of Klal Yisrael. You're going to take a risk? Why don't you call someone? Why don't you call Rivka? Call Rivka and ask Rivka, who do we got here? or call, I don't know, call someone. Right? Call someone. Why did he do this? All the different terutzim doesn't really answer, it doesn't answer the question. Know the answer is, I'll give you another answer. Maybe this is just a far-fetched answer. You know what the answer is? I'm going to use extreme words. I don't mean these words literally. Okay? I don't mean these words, just to bring out the point. He was poisoned. How can I say that? He was poisoned. I'm not. Don't take what I'm saying literally. He was poisoned. Yaakov poisoned Yitzchak. How can I say such a crazy thing? He was poisoned. What was the prerequisite to get the bracha? Haveli mat amin. Bring me delicacies. Bring me delicious, delicious food. Where did he get the delicious food from? Oh, he didn't go out to the field. He got it from his mother. Where does mother get it from? The ksuba. She told him that the shnei gidoy izim, Rashi told us, says, I'm going to give, it says, don't go out to the field. Here, I got in the house. animals. It's not my, it's my husband, but my husband, Yitzchak, when we got married, he wrote a ksuba, and in the ksuba he promised to give me every single day, whatever the ration was, they're mine. They're mine because it was promised to me in my marriage document, in my ksuba. So therefore they're mine, here, take it. Now let me just digress for a moment. Many Gedolei Yisrael warn, so all the Musa Svarim, you have a parnasa, you can make a lot of money, and you can make a little money. If you make a lot of money, sometimes the type of business you're in is questionable, the honesty. But if you make you did another parnasa, you can choose, you're not going to make a lot of money, but it's honest money. So all the Gedolei Yisrael say, forget about how much you're going to live. Think about your children. If your children are going to live in a home where they're going to be sustained from mammon that was acquired through gezel, through questionable means, it's impossible to prove it, but al pi our emuna, it's not going to be good for the children. If you're going to raise a family where the makar, the source of parnasa, is from questionable sources, it's going to have a bad effect. You're poisoning your children. You're feeding your children food that came from gezel. How can you contaminate their minds? Just like you wouldn't feed them non-kosher food with tamtein halev, if the food that you use, the money you use to buy the food that you feed your children comes from money that's not from a good source, you're going to contaminate their minds. Their minds are not going to be receptive to learn Torah, to have Yiras Shamayim. This is what they say. The institutions as well. If an institution takes money from sources that are not kosher, so now the lights in the Beis Medrash are being lit through sources of wealth that are not kosher. What do you think that Talmidim, when they learn Torah in that light, in the heat, in the environment of the Beis Medrash, the Svarim, and their salaries, and everything is being supported by Mammon that's not kosher v'yosher, you think they're going to have Siyato Dishmaya to become Talmidei Chacham and Yerushalayim? It's not going to work. You'll tell me all these territories, it's a Shinui, Yeush, a Shinui, and all these lumnas, put all the lumnas you want down aside. The bottom line is it's not going to be good. When you eat something, when you're supported by something, it's critical to know the makar, where it came from. Yaakov Avinu, Yitzchak was poisoned. Why would I was poisoned? Where did prerequisite to come to Ruach HaKodesh to give a bracha has to come from? He said himself, I need matamim, I need food. I need to elevate myself, enjoy myself, have a good feeling to give you bracha. I want you to go hunt. I want you to go out into the field to makom of hefker. I want you to use siyata d'shma, be mispalel, live in midrash, be mispalel, succeed in capturing prey, bring it home, prepare it. You'll do an avoda, you'll work, and that will sustain me, and they'll be worthy of bracha. Where did he get it from? He got it from Rivka. What was Rivka's intent from the very beginning? Rivka saw Esau for who he was. Rivka saw that Esau is a charlatan. She saw the real deal was Yaakov. And the one that deserves the bracha is Yaakov. This was Rivka's food. And in that food lied the belief of Rivka. This was Rivka's food. It was Rivka's food that Yaakov gave her. It's my food, and this food represents me, who I am, and I know as a fact that Yaakov is the one that deserves the bracha, and not Esau, and that belief went into the food to a certain degree. And when that food was now being fed to Yaakov, to Yitzchak, to some degree, is being poisoned. He's being influenced by that hashkafa of Rivka. But the truth is, that hashkafa, so you'll say, but he's being, that's not fair. The answer is, he's not being poisoned, he's being poisoned with his own poison. Because who gave that food to Rivka? Yitzchak himself. Yitzchak himself married her, he wrote her a ksuba. Let's just take a step back. What is the purpose of a ksuba? Why do you need a ksuba? Ksuba is not a deraisa. You can get married with kesef. Kesef, there's a way you get married with shtar. We don't do, you get married with shtar. Bia, kesef. What is a ksuba? Chazal said, a person gets married, so let's say he doesn't like his wife. well, he gets into a small fight, so it's very easy. I don't like her. You're not. We don't get along. So we can do one of. Either we can get divorced, or we can work things out. I'm not interested in working things out. I don't like you. I want to get divorced. So what does he do? He takes a piece of paper worth less than a pruta. He writes a get. He calls two witnesses, and within 5 minutes, she's out the door. Nothing. She's in the streets. So Chazal said it's not a good idea. It's not good for the world. It's not good for a person that just on a whim you can get rid of your wife. It's not a healthy thing for a religious person to do. But people can do it. And when a person gets angry, it could happen. So what is the solution? The solution is you write a ksuba. You know what it says in the ksuba? If you want to divorce your wife, you got to give her $70,000. Oh. Now, if you don't have the $70,000, so ooh, your parents aren't going to give you $70,000, they're not going to be so happy either to help you with to give you $70,000. Or someone, it's not going to be so pleasant to go give a divorce. Shaloi tehei kala be'enav lehoitzia. A ksuba represents, I believe in you. I'm marrying you, I believe in you, and if things don't work out, we'll make it work out. I have faith in you. I recognize there's more to you than what I see. And if things are not on the surface fine and good, don't worry. I know deep down we'll get it to work. And I'm going to make sure of that by writing a ksuba. So in other words, when Yitzhak Avinu gave a ksuba to Rivka, what was he telling Rivka? Rivka, I have faith in you. Even though I don't agree, under normal circumstances, we have a disagreement. Who's right, who's wrong? I'm right, and you're wrong. Therefore, get lost. You're out the door. You're divorced. I'm writing a ksuba. What does a ksuba mean? I think I'm right, and I think you're wrong. But the ksuba means, you know what? Maybe, Taka, you're right. Maybe you are right. And we'll work it out together. That's really what a ksuba is. Without a ksuba, disagreement. I'm right, you're wrong, get out. Ksuba, what does it accomplish? Maybe I'm not right. From the very beginning, I'm willing to acknowledge maybe you're right. We have a disagreement between Yaakov, between Rivka and Yitzchak, who should get the bracha. Yaakov or Esav? Yaakov, Yitzchak says Esav. Rivka says Yaakov. Who's right? I'm right. You're out. No, when I married you, I gave you a ksuba, which means, you know, Shaloi te kala be'enav lehoitzia. I got to think about it. Maybe, Taka, you're right. That's what the ksuba is. So, Rivka took the food of the ksuba, which represents that Yitzchak is mechuyev, to recognize that maybe Rivka is really right on this question, this big question. And that food was used to feed the mind of her husband Yitzchak, which blurred his machshava and said, you know what, go for it. Hashem, that caused him to have the machshava. You know what? Go for it. Go for it. Let's just give the bracha. And the truth was, it was Rivka's doing. Indeed, it was Yaakov. That's the ksuba. That's the deeper meaning of a mahalach to explain the deeper meaning of why she bedavka gave the gedayizim from the ksuba. What the ksuba represents and how it subconsciously influenced or different dimension of Ruchnius influenced Yitzchak to actually, because he made that condition himself of Mat'anim, and it was actually his decision of giving her the ksuba, and that exactly, he saved himself from himself by writing his wife the ksuba. Now it's exactly the same thing all over again in this week's parasha. Along comes Yosef. Yosef brings Ephraim and Menashe. Here are my children. They're good children. They're good children. Yaakov says, no, they're not. They're not good children. The Shechina departed. I don't see good things here. I see Yerub and Nevat. I see Yehu. I see Menashe. I see a lot of problems. So you know what Yosef says? Hey, look at the ksuba. He wasn't telling him, oh, look at my ksuba. I married Osnas. Kedasu Chedin, I gave her a ksuba. He was reminding Yaakov Avinu of what happened with his mother. Just because you don't see it on the surface, you have to realize there's something deeper beneath the surface. And that's the only reason why you, my father Yaakov, have the brachas. It's because Yitzchak also didn't see the good. Yitzchak saw the good in Esav. He didn't want to see the Guria. And why? Because there was a ksuba to Rivka, he had overlooked what was obvious and to have faith that there's something deeper down there where there's someone else. Rivka says, I'm telling you, this is the real one. This is the real deal. So too, I'm telling you, you have to have faith in me. The ksuba here is not between Yaakov and Yosef, obviously, but he's taking out the ksuba to remind his father, have faith in the ksuba. Look at the ksuba, have faith in me. I'm the father of these two children. I'm the father, and if I'm telling you, don't just look at the surface. Trust me, just like you trusted Yitzchak trusted Rivka because of the ksuba. Trust me, there's something deeper down here in these children that great things will come from. And indeed, he listened. He listened. You're right. I'm not going to go look at what I the Ruach HaKodesh. I'm going to give them bracha, and indeed, he gave them bracha. So here we have a connection of Bozeh. The Bozeh woke up Yaakov Avinu to the Shnei Gidoy Izim, which he himself brought to his father Yitzchak, to get the bracha, which basically accomplished the same thing. Don't look too much. Do what is right, and don't make too many cheshbonos. Okay, let's go to another idea.
I have a question. Why did Yaakov have waited 17 years to ask this question?
What do you mean 17 years?
About Yosef's kids.
He was dying.
Now he's giving the bracha. Now he's about to die. Now he's giving the bracha.
He was dying.
But wouldn't he want to have known the pedigree of these children earlier?
Maybe he assumed it was okay because he never had an issue. He never had to ask the question. Technical questions. I hear the question, but it was now he's dying. He's giving bracha. The Shechina is resting upon him. We don't know what that means exactly. The Shechina is resting upon him, and all of a sudden the Shechina departs. It was a sign. I shouldn't give the bracha. So now he wants to know, what's going on over here? Maybe there's something I'm not aware of. I didn't pay close enough attention to this. It was a timely thing. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, let me just give you a very quick idea. I really got a pleasure from this from Rav Eliashiv Zichasag Levracha. He says that over here, what happened? Yaakov Avinu, he switched his hands. He put his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menashe, and he said that the younger will.
You told us
already.
With us,
I said from Eliashiv.
Rav Soloveitchik shop.
So what I said from Rav Soloveitchik, very quickly. What I said from Rav Soloveitchik, can I remember?
That there was a machlokes between Yosef and Yaakov.
Yeah.
Remember that the chaydish and the chaydish thing. This was man. He was an ish tzaddik.
Okay, you gotta remind me later. Okay, we're going on time.
It was a great show. All right,
okay. You'll remind me. But right now, we'll just remember, I saw some Rav Yaakov yesterday, so he said, this is a short idea, but it's very powerful for our generation. What does that mean? Who's older? Menashe was older. Ephraim was younger. It's very common in our generation for people to say, so Rav Yaakov says, no, the older. Now he's talking. He wrote the sefer, but Divrei HaGadol. I think he wrote this. I think almost 60 years ago. Can you imagine? He wrote this 60 years ago, and he's saying that it's very, very common in his generation people to say, "Listen, you know, the old generation, they had potential for greatness. They saw the real thing. They saw what was like in Europe. They were closer to the source. The new generation, these kids today, they're spoiled. They need to have all different forms of entertainment. They need to enjoy life. They're not going to become great. You just got to deal with what you got. You can't expect too much from the youngsters of this generation. You know who's the first one to make this mistake? Yosef. Yosef brought his two sons in front of Yaakov, the older son and the younger son. The older son, Menashe, was with Yosef, we don't know exactly, longer, which means that he was closer to the real thing. When Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, it wasn't so easy to adjust. I mean, when Yosef came to Mitzrayim, even though he was in prison, and then he got Osnas, but the people of Mitzrayim, certainly in the beginning of his reign, when he was the Mishnah LeMelech, you know, they were looking at him like they were, is he really, who is this person? It took time for Yosef to break into Egyptian society. You certainly have a right to assume that Menashe was more disciplined than Ephraim. Ephraim already grew up at a time, he was younger, so Ephraim grew up at a time where he was established, He had a butler. He had a lot of games, a lot of fun, a lot of kavod. He had an easy life. Menashe was born earlier. It was more during a more difficult time then. Therefore, when you want to go and give a bracha, who's gonna achieve more in the spiritual world? Menashe, because Menashe is from the old generation. He was with me before. The younger generation, there's that much you can do for them. Yaakov Avinu says he's making a big mistake. Don't underestimate the young generation. You're not giving the bracha. The pasuk on the pasuk is, no, this one's going to be bigger. He's switching his hands on purpose to emphasize, don't underestimate the people of the later generations. Don't underestimate the people, the children today, in Yeshiva Katana, who grew up in America, and don't have any clue of what it was like to live among the Gedolim of 200, 300 years ago. Because the truth is, their potential is just as great, if not even greater, than the past generations. That's why, Simin Charoshe Vayimoyin Aviv, Vayimoyin Yodati V'ni Yodati. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that the old generation knew they have more potential. The young generation, put the left hand. Halavai, they should be Shemer Torah Mitzvos. You're making a big mistake. V'ula Mochiv HaKoton Yigdal Mimenu. What the later generation, if it's the Mashiach, what they will accomplish will be even greater than the accomplishments of the Gedolim of the previous generation. That is the message of Yashav learns in the Brocha of Yaakov to Yosef's two children. Okay, let's go to another idea. Yaakov buries Rachel on Beis Lechem. We all know in Eretz Yisrael, you go to Kvarim. Where do you go? You go to Maris Machpelah, right? The Avos, Maris Machpelah, Adam, Chava, and the Shlosh Avos. And then, if you can go, you get on a bulletproof bus, and you go to Beis Lechem, you go to, now it's surrounded by a whole wall, you go, it's a fortress, and you go to Kever Rachel, Beis Lechem. So over here in this week's parasha, we learn how Yaakov apologizes to Yosef, and he says, listen, what can I do? I had no choice that I was traveling on the road.
Page
141. No, that's how it is. Now, what's interesting is, when does Yaakov Avinu, when does he make mention of this, of what happened to Rachel, and don't have complaints, why I did this, I had no choice. There are many interpretations of why he had no choice, either because she died in childbirth, on a very simple level. Before going into, he saw Beruch HaKodesh, Rashi said Beruch HaKodesh, that at the time of the Chorban, they're going to pass her kever, she's going to be mispalel, the kin on Tisha B'Av, but she was a Yoledes, she died in childbirth. A woman who dies in childbirth, it's you have to bury her in ancient times immediately. You can't travel with the body because there's a lot of blood, and there's a lot of damage to the body. A person who dies a normal, natural death, you can take their body and you can bring it from far distances. But a person, Rahman al-Assam, who died in childbirth in ancient times, you can't take their body long distances because the body would decompose on the way because of the trauma of what happened during childbirth. And therefore, it's an emergency. The body has to be buried to maintain the ultimate dignity to the body. It must be buried right away. Okay, that's a very, very simple shot why you buried on that location. Okay, now what's interesting is, I saw this question is, why did the Bedavka tell him this in connection with what it says before Pasuk Hey, the Akdama to this is, Shnei Vanecha Hanoldim Chabiyaretz Mitzrayim Boyilecha Mitzrayim Olihem Ephraim Umenashe Kiro Kruvein Vishimon Hiuli Umoilad Techasha Hoilad Tachrem Lucha Yoshem Achrem. What's the heckish? In one breath, he calls them and he says to them, Ephraim Menashe, each one is going to get a chelik in the land. That's what he says. Ephraim and Menashe are going to be like Reuven and Shimon, just like Reuven and Shimon have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Ephraim and Menashe are going to also have separate portions in the land. We're going to take the land, and we're going to divide it in different pieces. You're only one Shevet, you're Yosef, but we're going to give you a double portion, one portion for Ephraim, one portion for Menashe. Chiluk hearts. And then, by the way, your mother knew, it's a sad story what happened with your mother. Don't have any complaints. I buried her on the road. My inyan zelza, my inyan shmita etel har sinai. Very good question. What's going on here? Next question. Next idea. I saw this in the Sefer. This the Ha'ara. I didn't see a good answer, but I saw Ha'ara there in Rabbi Klein's Sefer. I shouldn't say it's a good answer. I don't remember what I saw. I'll take it back. Everything there is gold. Rabbi Klein's Sefer, Alehi Goyon. He just makes an observation. Fascinating observation. What's the difference between Baris Nachpelah and Kever Rachel? Baris Nachpelah, Avram paid Arba Meo Shekel Kesef Oiver LaSeicher. Top dollar. According to my calculations, when I was a child, they told us we paid $3 million. You make a calculation, the price of gold, price of silver. There's a way to calculate it. Probably by now it's like $10 million, whatever it is. You can make a calculation, something like that, whatever it is. At least three $1 million. Paid full dollar for Ba'aras HaMachpelah. Kever Rachel, how much did Yaakov pay for Kever Rachel? Nowhere, in anywhere, but Chol HaTorah Kula, not in Bavel Yerushalmi, not in any of Medrash, does it say that he paid one penny for Yaakov. Yaakov, one penny for Beis Lechem Yehuda, didn't pay one penny. How could he do that? It's one thing, you know, you live, you want to be a squatter. Okay, you want to live on the land for free. Doesn't say that Avraham paid for rent. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say. But when Avraham came to bear, Avraham, we don't find anywhere that he paid rent, that he paid, he bought property. He's a squatter. I don't want to say that. But Avraham, he knew him. He lived. Hashem promised him the land, but not yet. You know, it's going to be another 1,000 years until they conquer the land, whatever it's going to be. In the meantime, but burial? Oh, this is forever. So this you got to pay. It's not my land yet. So therefore, you got to pay for burial, because burial, you're going to be here for a very long time. So l'chayra, mice of a similar bondim. I mean, l'chayra, if Yaakov is going to bury Rachel, he should also follow the way of his father Avraham Avinu, and he should buy the kever. Right? Isn't that right?
Yeah.
It wasn't the property of Avraham. It was before we conquered the land. Even the Rashi says Hashem gives us, whoever, but he didn't give it to us yet.
Or he should bury her in Maros HaMachpelah.
Well, he couldn't go there, but at least he should pay for it. He should pay. Yet there's no record anywhere that he paid one penny for Kever Rachel.
How are
you talking? Going from $3 million to a freebie? How are you talking? What's going on here? So I want to suggest that it's totally zeh b'zeh. In other words, why did Avraham Avinu pay for Baris Machpelah? Hashem said to him, that was the Bris Ben Absarim, Avraham Avinu, it's your land. I'm giving you Eretz Yisrael. First pasuk in Rashi, HaChodesh Zeh Lachem, why was it written Hashem created the world, he gave it? So the answer is, Avraham was premature. I have not, my children are not yet born, I have not yet conquered. The Brisbane episode, B'mo Eda Ki Yiroshena. Aravim himself said, how do I know? When it came to the fact that Hashem said, you can have a child, Vehemin Bahashem. Ah, Vehemin Bahashem, Vayach Shevech Eloi Tzedakah. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael, what does Aravim say? Really? B'mo Eda Ki Yiroshena. And what's Sechus? How? When? Where? What? There was something lacking. Aravim showed, it's not yet. Maybe in the future it will happen, but certainly at this point in time, I don't have an achiz. It's not my land. It's not my property. It's not my property. I want to buy a parcel of land to bury my wife. I have no choice but to pay top dollar. I have to go buy it. Yaakov Avinu was already three generations later. Yaakov Avinu, where was he going, by the way, when his wife died? He was returning to Eretz Yisrael. He was now beloved. He built a family. He now had in mind the whole history, the bracha of Eretz Yisrael. He's now returning with the Shiftei Ka, and he comes to Eretz Yisrael for the very first time with a mishpacha. He comes now with Klal Yisrael. The Shiftei Ka arrive at Admas HaKodesh. But he didn't conquer it yet. I didn't conquer it. There's only a promise. Yaakov Avinu says, Hashem's good for his word. Vehemin b'Hashem. It's my land. It's my land. Hashem promised it to us. I'll take it for free. Not because I'm taking it for free. It's mine. I'm bedavka not going to pay for it. base, kever Rachel, it's not just who's buried there. The kever itself was an expression of faith. That this is the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And you don't have to ask any questions and be embarrassed to say, oh, we'll make a peace settlement, we'll give you half the land, we'll do this. Avraham Avinu lived in a tkufa where he wasn't ready for that yet. It was still b'moeda. I'm not yet ready to implement the haftocha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it's mine. And therefore, in the meantime, I'm willing to pay, I'm willing to make settlements. I'm willing to have peace agreements and have partition and have this and that. You do all these different things. That was Avraham Avinu. That was an earlier tkufa. Yaakov Avinu Ishra Emes, already two generations later, coming back with the Shiftei Ka, already a token fulfillment of the promise that Hashem gave Avraham Avinu. When he buried Rachel, what he was doing was an amazing thing. I'm going to bury her here. I'm not going to pay one penny for the kever because it's my land. Yaakov Avinu is not going to, he's not going to pay. Yaakov Avinu paid, was not willing to pay one penny for the land. It was, burying her here was an expression of emuna that it's my land. And that is my land. And that is why it is specifically here where Klal Yisrael was mispalel when they went into Golis. When Klal Yisrael went into Golis, so we know Rachel Mavak al Boneha. Why is Rachel Mavak al Boneha? So because of the simonim, which we'll come to in a moment, the simonim. But it's not just the simonim. It's not just the person who's being Mavaka. It's the kever. When Klal Yisrael is now going into Golis, they're on their way out of the land. They're losing the land. They're on the way to Golis. Where do they stop? They stop by Kever Rachel. Kever Rachel was the first mokum where the Avos did a maisa, which showed their emuna, it's our land. We're coming back. We have to leave temporarily because of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, because of our chatoyim. But we're coming to this makom, which was the first makom where no one even paid for it. He showed its possession, it's my property. And that is also specifically why, who's buried there? Rachel. What did Rachel do? Rachel showed the ultimate emunah. I mean, it's mind-boggling what Rachel did. She gave away the simonim to Leah, and what's going to be with her? Here she was meant to marry Yaakov Avinu, they were planning to marry Yaakov Avinu, he's worked for her for 7 years, and now she sees that my sister's going to be embarrassed, and she performed the ultimate emunah. There was no hope for her. That she didn't expect to, there'll be two, she'll marry Yaakov Avinu later on. She gave it up. And what will be? You have to do the right thing. You have to express your emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What was the chesaron in Avraham Avinu when it came to Eretz Yisrael? He didn't have that emunah. With regard to Yitzchak, the Hem and the Hashem, where Eretz Yisrael, in contrast to the emunah of children, Bamoeda, who was a person that showed an incredible degree of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever will be, I'm not going to make any calculations, you don't make any cheshbonos, you don't look at the mitzias. It was Rachel. Rachel gave up on the marriage to Yaakov Avinu because it was the right thing to do. Her sister should not be embarrassed. A person that has emunah deserves to be buried in this makom, which represents my first emunah in Hashem's haftacha that we will inherit the land. And it's therefore specifically this piece of land where Klal Yisrael came back to when they stopped off when they left Eretz Yisrael. Okay. I want to conclude with Asar B'Teves. What did I do with my thing? I have no idea. Okay, let me just conclude with one short var relating to Asar B'Teves. Today it's a unique day. It's Erev Shabbos, the Tainus. We enter into Shabbos hungry. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, where Tisha B'Av was on Sunday. Why was it on Sunday? Because really Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos. So we had no choice but to push Tisha B'Av ahead one day. So I went to one of these, gatherings on Tisha B'Av. We have all these whole day speakers. and a speaker, and one of the Darshanim, he said a very powerful idea which made an impression on me. He said, this year, on Tisha B'Av, this year, that particular year, where Tisha B'Av was on Sunday, we didn't make Havdalah. Havdalah was not a halacha. You don't make Havdalah until Sunday night. Now, you say Atachan Antanu, you say Baruch HaMavdil, you could do Malacha, but if you don't make the real Havdalah until Mitzvah Tisha B'Av, to some degree, Shabbos is not over. Shabbos is not over until you make Havdalah. So the whole theme of his drasha was, a Tisha B'Av, that's a Nidcha, it's not just a Tisha B'Av. It's a Tisha B'Av that has within it the Kiddush of Shabbos. It's like a Tisha B'Av on steroids. Shabbos is a day of Kiddusha. There are things that you can accomplish on Shabbos that you can't accomplish any other day of the week. Shabbos, Yom Menucha, that year, you don't make Havdalah. It's Tois v'Shabbos. The whole Tisha B'Av was an extension of Shabbos. And in fact, I saw this later on, that chassid, the different minhagim, what to do when you say kinnis at night. Mitzoy Tisha B'Av, Sunday by day, you come Big Day Chol, you wear Big Day Avelos, whatever you do. But Mitzoy Shabbos, there are different customs. And by many chassidim, they have a hakpada, they bedavka say the kinnis, and they say Eicha and kinnis wearing Big Day Shabbos. This probably used to be the minhag. It used to be years ago that in the old minhagim were, you bring your kinnis and your shoes to shul before Shabbos, and as soon as you daven Ma'ariv, you right away say kinnis. It became a new thing in this generation. We are no. Not so fast. Everyone doesn't come back. You go home, there's a big break until you change your clothing, and you come, you say kinnis. That's not necessarily the right way to do it. The right way to do it, that we do it for practical reasons, people brought in a lot of children and this and that, all these considerations, but that was not the traditional way to do it. So it's not because they weren't so sophisticated or because they didn't have leaders. There's something to saying kinnis wearing your Big Day Shabbos. Can you imagine? It's a contradiction. Kinnis is avelus. You're in a state of avelus. You don't wear your strimal and your bekesha and your nice. You sit on the floor. You're sitting on the floor mitzvah Shabbos saying kinnis and echa and your strimal. The answer is yeah, you do. You do because Tisha B'Av will one day be turned into a yomtiv. It's a day when Mashiach is born, and it's a bittersweet day. On the one hand, there's a tsar, but on the other hand, there's also some degree of simcha. Kadosh Baruch Hu spared us by destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And the way you're able to do that is when the two come together, they merge, where Shabbos, the Kiddush of Shabbos, is part of the Tisha B'Av. If that's true in a year, when Tisha B'Av is on Sunday, how much more so is it true this year when we do even better? Where Asar B'Teves is Erev Shabbos. Normally you don't have a halacha, you're not allowed to be makdi, you're not allowed to, where the beginning of Shabbos, the hachana for Shabbos, includes the mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. Asar B'Teves is the day when the siege, when the Churban, the very beginning of the Churban began. And what are we doing today? Shabbos Mincha. Today, is the Sfar, they say Hoidu. Can you imagine? You're saying Hoidu, Hoidu. You only say Hoidu, Erev Shabbos, Kedusha Shabbos. And part of the Mincha of Hoidu, you're going to say Aneinu Hashem, Aneinu B'Yom Tzom, Tani Seinu. And especially those people who are going to daven late, they're going to daven, they're going to be davening the Big Day Shabbos. And you hear you're being Misabel over the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and the Aschalto de Paranusa is more chomor. Today's fast day is more chomor than Tisha B'Av. And yet today, on the Aschalto de Paranusa, we're merging, we're blending it together with Kedusha Shabbos. The Kedusha of Shabbos is a special time of Asar B'Teves. On Shabbos, you can't ask for private needs. You're not supposed to. It's a day that's miyuchad for Kedusha. But if you could, can you imagine how much you could accomplish? That's really what we're doing today. We're taking the Kedusha of Shabbos. It starts already Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, and we are in this special tkufa, we're able to ask our personal needs for geula, for Mashiach to come. Aneinu Hashem, aneinu b'yom tzom tani seinu. It is a maila, not a chesaron, that we're able to mevakesh our tzrachim on Erev Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. Have a wonderful Shabbos, have an easy fast, and chazak, v'nis chazek.